Real legitimate apparitions is told one episode after another, but exists all at once. Headphones recommended. Episode 9 starts now.
The following was recorded between 1994 and 2016.
I am in the woods. You will complete your Sarah's Creek with these kids almost tomorrow.
It was a chilly.
Close every circle.
Millions of red, yellow, brown leaves falling to the ground as
doing big groceries.
Going less
I came across the house.
I like it better that way.
It was three stories tall, early 20th century art there with Trump savings.
You are my world.
The red painted door with a heavy brass knocker that opened on
you must actively complete these circles.
Instead, a large wooden board, half covered door.
Complete the circle.
A laminated permit.
If it's not possible, it can't happen.
I looked up, but my eyes locked on a large window.
Hello?
The small
hi there. It's Dylan.
I was on the doorstep of the Leslie Hill House.
To be honest, I'm sure people propose here all the time.
Dylan! Hi! I'm Hunt Force. How are you?
I'm fine. I just wanted to follow up with you about the Colonel.
Behind Misha's smiling eyes flashed confusion.
Oh! Totally. Did you want to come in?
Well, only if you're free.
Yeah, I'm just looking after my nephew right now. We're playing with blocks and making cookies, so if you could just be really quick.
Climbing these steps behind Misha filled my mind with the last time I was here.
You brought your whole team. Hi, my name's Rachel. Misha.
Rachel, the deputy assistant to the general. And this is Daryl.
Desmond.
Hi, Desmond. What do you do with Hunt Force?
Shall we go have a chat? By this time, we had all piled into this crammed entranceway. Misha was standing on the bottom step of a steep flight of stairs.
Sure, come on up.
The stairs led to her apartment, which made up the top two floors of the townhouse. We all followed her, Thomas and I carrying our large duffel bags of equipment.
Hi, everyone.
When we reached the top step, another young woman was there, greeting us.
Everyone, this is Amy.
Hi.
Hello.
Hey.
But Amy wasn't waiting for us at the top of the stairs. Instead, there was a little boy who was sitting on the living room floor, surrounded by dozens of blocks strewn across the floor.
Edward! Do you want to come say hi to Dylan?
After I shook Edward's hand and he showed me a few of his blocks, I asked if I could check on the upstairs bathroom for follow-up purposes. Misha said that after our visit, all of the water issues had stopped. She said that I might have, exercised whatever was going on in the bathroom out. And she asked if I'd been okay after the seizure. I told her again everything was fine.
Did you want me to come with you?
Nah, it's okay. Stay with Edward. I know where it is. I'll just be a sec.
As I opened the door to the bathroom, I wasn't sure what to do. But I also knew by now that that didn't really matter. I smiled at how simple it all was. I stepped into the room and looked around, trying to avoid looking at myself in the mirror. I crossed to the window and looked out at the sunny day. A bird flew past. I turned around. I looked in the bathtub. There was no water flowing. And then, like I knew would happen, Edward ran into the room.
Hello.
Hi.
Edward pointed to the bathtub with his eyebrows bent in a quizzical knot.
Is this your bath?
Edward nodded as if that was exactly the right question to ask him. And then I remembered who was also in the bathroom with me. Not right now, not in the way that Edward and I could see him, but here all the same. I turned to where Desmond had sat, was sitting, will sit, on the toilet, and I told him what I needed to and wanted to.
You're a good guy, Desmond. Rachel's gonna need you. Stick with her, and thank you.
And then Misha came up the stairs.
Eddie! Sorry, I just had to check on the cookies.
Thanks for dropping by.
And into the room.
There you are! He's at that age where if you look away for one moment, he escapes, don't you?
Yeah!
Sorry about that.
It's no problem. Actually, I think I'm already done here.
Oh yeah?
Yeah. I just want to see that everything's settled.
Okay, awesome. It's good to see you again. Did you want some cookies?
You will
take some for the road.
Your circle.
Came at the perfect time.
I'm in my tent at lot 29 of Brent Campground in Algonquin Park. I've rented both lots, hers and mine. I'm about to head out and meet her for the first time. I've been here so many times in my life. I came here in my late teens when I was just starting to see, and I had movements to the moment Catherine and I met. She was so beautiful, and when I saw her, I knew. I came here every summer waiting for her, and when she didn't show up, I'd see her anyway. I probably covered that day 2 or 3 dozen times so far. And when the day finally came and I noticed her and her friends unpacking their tents, I was so excited, too excited. Yeah, I thought I'd ruin it, but it turns out that the movement led me to meet her. I saved myself, which I do way too much of. So apparently today's the day. I'm excited now, but not too excited. Over the years, I've got that under control.
Close every circle.
Today I did groceries. Recently, I've been filling up my cart more, doing bigger groceries, going less often. I like it better that way. It gives me more time to myself. I drove along St. Clair with a trunk full of supplies.
Dr. Nielsen, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for having me.
So, how did these dolphins take to the alcohol?
Well, believe it or not, we found that these dolphins preferred whiskey, in particular Macallan.
Scottish whiskey?
Yes. And we did find that after one member of the pod had consumed a certain amount, they would exhibit a kind of tipsy behavior, and the social ramifications were quite strong.
We actually have a clip here.
Yes, so what you're hearing here is the interaction between one intoxicated dolphin and their pod.
Now, forgive me if I can't tell the difference between sober dolphins and tipsy dolphins, but is this normally how they sound? Because I'm just hearing a lot of clicking.
I saw a parking lot to my right and pulled the car into it.
Clicks like this, whether they are sober or after some Macallan whiskey.
I stopped in an empty space. My palms had become sweaty.
Drink the whiskey in the first place.
Well, we first introduced the alcohol through the food. We would soak.
I realized that I was in the parking lot of a deluxe, which is a paint shop here in Toronto. Spread across the store windows was a huge banner saying up to 80% off pre-mixed paints.
Enjoy the fish and still consume enough alcohol to feel an effect.
Hi there.
Hi. I saw that you had paint for sale.
I'm sorry?
I saw you had paint for sale?
Yep, we do. It's on that wall over there. The sales price is on the sticker.
I walked over to the wall of paint. I started looking at the paints from the left. Purity, which was an off-white, 20% off. Cave Pearl, a light creamy green, 30% off. Miami Jade, a stronger green, 40% off. Calypso Berry, a bright strong red which seemed familiar, 80% off.
This the one?
Yes.
Oh yeah, that's a good sale.
That's what I need.
Well, then you came at the right time.
Okay.
This is it.
Thanks.
This was the place. Behind this giant tree that I've watched grow over the last 40 years. This is it, big buddy. There she is. Her and her friends setting up their tents. Catherine's just finishing. She puts the last peg in the ground and then stands up. She walks to the picnic table by the fire pit and picks up her water bottle. She takes a big swig. Here we go. Hi. Sorry to bug you. Could I borrow your lighter? Just to light my fire? Oh yeah, no problem. I'm just at the lot next door. Thanks. Yours are nice too. It's a great setup. I'm Nathan. Hi, Catherine. Thanks for the lighter. How long am I here for? Oh, a couple days. You? There's a great kayak rental place down at the lake. Okay, maybe I'll see you there.
Back in my apartment, I took off my shoes and dropped the paint onto the coffee table. I got a butter knife and pried off the metal lid to reveal a deep and bright red. I realized I might not own a brush. I went over to the wall of my apartment where the star chart hung. It was a large black poster, essentially. Most of it was taken up by a large white circle filled with little white dots. Each dot representing a star. And these stars were supposedly in the position they were relative to Ottawa, Ontario, where and when I was born. I lifted it off the wall and leaned it against the opposite wall, and then went to my closet to see if I could find a paintbrush. But the poster wasn't balanced properly. It fell away from the wall, landed on the coffee table, and pushed the open can of paint over the edge. The can rotated in the air, and the deep bright red paint flowed out of it with ease onto the floor below, landing perfectly upside down.
Fuck!
At first I was mad. Really mad. The paint was crawling like some kind of slime monster across the floor in all directions, soaking into the side of the rug, enveloping a dard that was lying on the floor. But the anger subsided, because I realized that this paint always falls, always had fallen, always will fall. That while I was responsible for leaning the poster where I did, I couldn't avoid it as much as the poster could avoid falling down. And so a smile crossed my face. I walked over to the red paint and took a step into it. The thick red liquid soaked into my socks. I knelt down and spread my hands into the red and watched as it wrapped itself around my fingers. I held my hands up and watched the red stream down my forearms, reach my elbows, and drip back into itself. I stood up and walked to the wall that once displayed the star chart. I reached towards the ceiling and began to write my own name in giant letters. When I finished the Y, I went back to the lake of red, my feet working the red into the grain of the wooden floors. After I'd completed my name, I began to work on the word find. By now, the red had crawled its way over to me in my wall, which made the task easier. When I'd finished, I went back to the table so I could witness my work of art as a whole. Dylan Find Spencer was written just as I had remembered it, or seen it, or as it always is. I couldn't scream. My body wouldn't let me. I looked down at my hands. They were covered in red paint.
This can't be it. This can't be it. Why? He can't. He doesn't understand. What have I done? I'm so sorry.
Over the airwaves. Hi.
Hey, for which movie?
What's playing?
All the movies are listed above.
Oh, okay, I don't know. Anything.
Alright, yeah. Passengers starts in like 5 minutes in Theater 4. It's pretty good.
Okay, one for Passengers.
Scene card?
No.
11:17.
On debit. Thanks.
Hi. Ticket?
Hi.
The end of the hallway, on your right.
Okay, here I am in the Scotiabank movie theater. I'm going to try and find, or remember, the cinema Maddie and I were in. They're all pretty similar. We'd been seeing Captain America Civil War. I guess it's best to start with the theater I actually have a ticket to, which is Theater 4. Okay. Okay, I'm in back of the theater now. I'm pretty sure this was around where Maddie and I were sitting. We always wanted the kind of third last row. Yeah. Okay, now what was it? Madison, I hate you and I want to leave you. I'm sorry. You can't be here for this. It's got to end. Okay, next theater. I hate you and I want to leave you.
Madison, I hate you, and I want to leave you. It's not fair, I know. Not to me, not to you, but that's what it is. Madison, so this is how it starts. You hear this and it bangs around in your head. I go south and it ends. It is my fault. I hate you and I want to leave you. Madison, I hate you and I want to leave you. Madison, I hate you and I want to leave. I hate you and I want to leave you. I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. I hate you and I want to leave you. I'm so sorry.
Over the airwaves.
Goodbye.
Ay caramba. Can you hear it? Feel the feeling over the airwaves.
Never put your gun in your backpack, idiot!
Do you hear it? There's a spirit over the
airwaves.
Do you hear it?
It was a chilly, overcast November day. Millions of red, yellow, and brown leaves coated the ground as I walked south. I came across the house. It was 3 stories tall with early 20th century architecture, the same as before. But the red painted door with a heavy brass knocker that opened onto a porch wasn't there anymore. Instead, a large wooden board half covered a doorless entrance. A laminated permit was stapled to it. I looked up and my eyes locked on a large window on the 3rd floor. Before, the small white face of Mrs. Truco had been staring down at me beside a drawn curtain. Now, there was a new window installed, covered in plastic. There was no face looking down. I walked up to the board with the permit stapled to it. Interior renovations, it said. There was also a sign, private property, do not enter, taped below. I slipped past the board and through the open doorway. Miss Marnie Truco had lived in a house filled with dark, decorative wood. There had been wooden floors, an elaborate ceiling of woven wood and plaster. This had all been removed. The floorboards ripped up, walls stripped. The ceiling had been dismantled, revealing the beams holding up the floor above. It was like the whole house had been skinned. I continued down the hallway and came to the high-ceilinged room. Before, this room had had a heavy wooden table, several chairs and burning candles. The walls had been covered in wood paneling. Now, the room was empty, the floor ripped up, furniture gone, and the walls stripped bare, revealing the insulation. In one corner of the room was a large red toolkit with tools on the floor surrounding it. There was also a large cup of Tim Hortons coffee. But I could also see the table and the chairs and Tom and Marnie with candles burning on the table and their faces looking up at me expectantly. Or I thought I saw them. I didn't, but it felt like I did. The more I thought about it, the more it seemed like such a simple thing.
Hello? Hello? I saw you come in here.
My stomach turned. I wondered what to do next and then reminded myself that it didn't matter. That is what I do, always did, and always will do.
Hello? I'm in here. Come on.
It's you that's been stealing our stuff?
The man was old. He was bald with a thick gray mustache, and he looked confused and angry.
We just need to be here for a sec.
The man shook his head and pointed towards the front door.
What did you take?
Just a moment, then I'll leave. Spencer?
The man's face twisted with more anger now, as if this confirmed I was here to cause trouble.
I'm not Spencer. Get out of here or I'll call the cops.
I didn't know where to go from here. I looked back to where I knew Tom and Mrs. Truco had been that night all those years, or months, or minutes ago.
Is that enough? I can't stay longer.
This is breaking and entering.
He had his iPhone out to make a call. He looked at me as if he was used to dealing with people like me. But I didn't move. I knew there was more I had to do.
What was it?
The man dialed.
Wait, Wait, okay.
The man displayed the numbers 911 on the screen of his phone.
Marnie wants me to tell you.
He hit the green call button and put the phone to his ear. I clamped my hands around my forehead and tried to think.
The kids miss you and they wish they could say hi to you. And they love you.
I don't know what the hell you're talking about.
Okay, I think that's it. I'm out of here.
I said to Tom and Mrs. Truco. I walked around the man, into the hall, and out of the open doorway.
Fuck. Fuck, work. I don't have time for this crap. Are you recording? Okay. Okay. Hello, I just saw that the Toronto Public Library is renovating and getting rid of a series of study rooms, one of which is the room I need to be in to write the poems, and they're closing now. Fuck. I don't know how they go or what the hell they were about. I trusted that I could go back and write them, but obviously I ran out of time.
Fuck, obviously.
Yes?
Hi, I need to get in here.
What?
Yeah, please.
No, I booked this time.
I'm sorry, you're gonna have to let me in.
No.
Don't close the fucking door. Look at me. I need this room. I'm sorry.
There are other rooms.
No, there isn't. I need this one.
What's your problem, man?
Right now, you are. I have to be inside this room before they renovate and remove them tonight, and I should have come earlier, but I've had a lot of things to do, and I need to be in this room so I can contact my son.
What? Your son isn't here.
Get out!
Hey, don't touch me.
I'm sorry.
Oh, okay, fine.
I'm sorry.
Fucking lunatic? Oh, I'm going to security.
Thank you. Okay, 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 okay. Okay. There we go. For Catherine, to fall in love with a caterpillar would be wonderful.
I had a dream last night. My family and friends are here with me, beside me. They aren't anyone I recognize or have seen before, but I know that I have known them my entire life. In front of us is a bright wall filled with action. There are people walking and running and interacting, great animals lumbering, structures moving and swaying. My friends and family and I watch all of this action and follow the drama and events at times with joy, at times with anticipation, at times with fear. What happens on the bright wall is everything. It is heaven. And then I realize six things at the same moment. My head is released from a cold metal brace that had been holding it in place. My hands are released from cold metal cuffs that were holding my hands behind my back. My feet are released from cold metal chains that were holding them in place. I turn my head for the first time and I realize three things at the same moment. All of my friends and family are in the same braces and cuffs and chains, forced to watch the bright wall in front of them. There is an even brighter source of light than the bright wall. The light is dancing, burning my eyes. This light is lighting up the less bright wall in front of my friends and family. Things are moving backwards and forwards between me and the great bright fire. Things I've never seen before. Oddly shaped things, large and small things. All of these moving things are casting shadows in the bright light of the fire, and these shadows are dancing in front of my friends and family on the less bright wall in front of them. My friends and family and I haven't been watching people and animals and structures, but only shadows of the things moving backwards and forwards in front of the fire. I feel a force pull me off to the side, and I realize two things at the same moment. My home is really inside a great cavern in which the only source of light is the great bright fire. I am pulled outside of this cavern and into a narrow tunnel that leads upwards until the tunnel gets brighter and brighter, until I emerge from the tunnel and out into bright, clear, fresh air. Even with my eyes closed, they burn from the brightness. After a moment, my eyes begin to adjust. When they do, I realize three things at the same moment. For the first time in my life, I am out of the dark cave. The glowing orb in the sky is responsible for all things that it casts its light upon. The glowing orb in the sky is responsible for everything I have seen so far, including the shadows on the wall in my home. I am forced up off the ground, and I move towards the dark tunnel. I am pulled downwards along the tunnel, until the tunnel gets darker and darker. till it becomes the pitchest black I've ever seen. I'm back in the great cavern where the dim fire burns. The force pulls me in front of the fire and releases me at my position in front of the wall. My head is locked in a cold metal brace. My hands are locked in cold metal cuffs. My feet are locked in cold metal chains. In front of me is a dim wall with dim shadows moving backwards and forwards. Shadows that I can barely make out. And now I know that I live in hell.
In the jaws of oblivion, this path takes him.
This is security.
On one hand, damnation and fall.
Sir,
to the floor.
You don't have an appointment with
on
this
one
room.
Hand, absolution like never before.
Stop writing and look at me.
There is only ever one future path of the pioneer, as in my life, all lives, only
sir,
one.
Sir, look at me.
You must shed what you know of the world.
It's time to leave the library.
And only then you will find
1026.
The great secret truth.
Yeah, sir, I'm going to place my hand on your shoulder and we're going to leave the library.
Because you saw me at the lighthouse.
Get up, sir.
Like truth hidden in a lockbox.
Put down the pencil and get up.
I will see you again. And we will be free.
Sir.
Oh, damn.
Hold him.
I hardly touched
Hold him.
Got him.
All lines, can I get a 1052? We have a seizure in 114.
Hello?
Hello? Is this Dylan?
This is Dylan, yeah. Who's this?
Dylan, this is Kate.
Kate?
Your mother's friend.
Yeah. Hi, Kate.
Where are you right now?
I'm at home.
Dylan, I'm so sorry to tell you this. Your mother's in the hospital.
Oh.
She had a heart attack. She didn't make it, Dylan.
She didn't make it?
Your mother's passed away. It was so sudden. She called me and told me that she phoned for an ambulance. I went out to meet them and then went with her to the hospital. She was weak, but seemed okay. And then they wheeled her into the ER and I stayed in the waiting room. And it took a long while. And then the nurse called me into the room with the doctor. And she told me. I'm so sorry, Dylan. I am. I spoke to Rachel already.
How is she?
Rachel? Have you spoken to her?
No, not since.
Yes. She's been distant since the attack. Oh, Dylan, I'm so sorry.
Me too. I'll come up to Ottawa.
Thank you.
I drove up, saw Kate. She was a wreck. She cried on my shoulder for hours. 3515 Southgate Road is located in the South Keys neighborhood of Ottawa, Ontario. From the Parliament buildings in the downtown of the city, it's about a 20-minute drive south along Bank Street. The most exciting thing about South Keys is the mall, a massive kilometer or half-mile-long stretch of giant box stores with a Loblaws, which is like a big Canadian grocery store, on one end, and a Cineplex on the other. 2,982 cars can fit into the cement fields of the parking lot. Across the six lanes of Bank Street is a neighborhood of hundreds of suburban houses, all similar. 3515 Southgate Road is the address of one of these houses, the house where I grew up. There's a little paved driveway which leads to a little garage, a little bay window that overlooks a plain patch of lawn. A little white door fits into the little brick wall. A little shingled roof hangs over the brick with a white eaves trough running along the edge and then down the side of the house to the foot of the little white door. It's not much, but it was home for the first big chunk of my life. Kate had given me the keys. It was dark inside. The door opened into a vestibule area. Mom's shoes were placed neatly in a row on a shoe stand on the left. Above it were hooks mounted on the wall and a thin shelf with a few keys. Above the shelf was a little painted tile hanging by a ribbon tied to a nail sticking out of the drywall. Home is not a place, it's a feeling, it said. I opened the door a little wider and revealed the polished wood floor of the hallway which led left and right. Beyond the hallway was a white tiled kitchen. A wide window looked onto the backyard over a well-used sink. There was an empty bottle of dish soap turned upside down into a cup to get out every last drop. And I could already picture her, my mom, standing there doing those dishes as a 6-year-old me ran around the kitchen table. I took a step into the hallway. On my left was the living room. Two low blue-gray couches, a low coffee table, and a little television in the corner. In front of each pane of glass in the bay window hung white plastic blinds. It was dark in here as well, with the blue evening light working its way through the strips of plastic. At the other end of the room is a sliding door leading to the backyard porch. The ceiling is tall, with exposed beams holding up the roof. Nothing had changed in 30 years. On my right, the hallway extended further. There was a bathroom on the left. Simple. Mom's toothbrush and toothpaste stood in a mauve cup. The door on the right was Mom's room. Inside were pale yellow walls, a well-made bed, closet, and a large makeup table in front of a mirror. On the table were pictures. A picture of Mom and Rachel and I from decades ago. Rachel couldn't have been older than 8. Beside this photo was a picture of me. Maybe my high school graduation. I didn't recognize myself. I pictured my mom here, sitting in the same wooden chair that had sat here the day that Dad had left, and phoning us, telling me, "Kate and I are going for coffee," as she looked at a photo of me when I was 17. Further down the hallway was another door on the left. This had been Rachel's room. It had been cleaned up. The bed was perfectly made. Some of Rachel's childhood books filled a white cabinet. The light green walls were blank, cleared of all the posters she used to stick up. The closet door was closed. Inside were cardboard boxes filled with organized piles of Rachel's old toys, notebooks, stuffed animals. The room looked like it was made to host guests, but I know Mom hadn't hosted anyone but Kate for a while. I pictured Rachel, age 13. Lying in bed with her feet in the air, reading a teen magazine. "Get out," she'd say to me as I stood in the doorway. At the end of the hallway was the door that led to my bedroom. The walls in here were a pale red. A pink, Rachel had called it. But I liked it. This was the darkest room in the house so far, but my eyes had adjusted by now and I wasn't about to start turning on lights. The bed was meticulously made, like it had never been for the 20 years that I'd lived there. There was a dresser, a floor-length mirror, a closet that might have been filled with boxes of toys and cars and figurines. I took a step into the room, and then I saw someone. In the mirror, a man is standing. He looked to be maybe 40, 35. He had a scruff of a beard. I couldn't really see his face in the darkness, but it seemed like he was looking at me. "Welcome home," said the man. "Who are you?" I asked. "I am, was, will be, you," he said. "Do you live here?" "Yes," said the man, and then he continued. "It's good to see that you finally made it." "What are we doing here?" I asked him. I still couldn't make out his face. "Only time will tell. Only time will tell." I paused and thought about what to say next. It was a lot of pressure talking to your future, past, and present self. "Mom's dead," I told him. "I know," he said. "You're an orphan." "I'm not an orphan. I'm 35. 36? 30. "You've lost your way," said the man. But he knew as well as I that I didn't have a choice.
"You used to have a choice."
"I thought I did, but I was always going to end up here with you."
"What a small-minded way to think."
I could see a glint off the side of one of his eyes. He looked me up and down, wondering what I could handle.
"You're a disgrace."
The word rang through the empty dark room.
It sunk into my bed sheets. It curled into the boxes in my closet. "I'm sorry," I said. A lump had formed in my throat. "Maybe it's not what you wanted it to be or expected it to be, Dylan. But it is what it is."
"Don't say that,"
shouted Dylan at the mirror.
"You were dealt a pretty good hand and you ruined it."
"No, I didn't."
"Yes, you did. You know what it's like to be me?"
And now I was getting mad.
"My whole life, I've been rolling like a rock down a hill. And my whole life, I thought I could control where I went and how I got there. But then you start to second guess, right? You start to discover that you can't choose or control or change as much as you thought you could. So you try harder, and you push against it harder and harder. And the harder you try, the more you discover that you're just rolling and falling, and you can't affect it or stop it or choose it, and you're trapped. And I'm trying, Dylan. I'm trying to fight for you here, but it feels like I'm fighting against...
the universe?
Yes, I'm fighting against my life.
Hey, at least we had some good times, right?
Like what?
Like the source.
You liked working there?
And Maddie, of course.
Of course, Maddie.
And Haunt Force, remember?
Yeah.
You were the chief leader.
I was the best. Tom was the executive field and operations manager.
Yeah,
yeah.
That bullet sailed clean through his skull.
The image of Tom lying on the floor dead with a hole in his forehead and blood flowing around his open eyes filled my mind. It was as if he was lying on the floor of my bedroom.
"We had some good times, but we didn't get anything done," the man said to the other man.
"No, we didn't. Look at Dad. At least Dad made you."
"What an accomplishment," said the man, and they both laughed. A pause filled the room. It was a crushing pause. The words the man had said were bouncing around the child's room like hundreds of small bouncy balls. "I've closed all the circles."
"No, you haven't."
"I haven't?"
"Dylan, Dylan, Dylan. You've barely even begun."
You can follow this story on Instagram and Twitter with @RLAseries. Please consider visiting patreon.com/RLAseries to support the show and reviewing it on your favorite podcast app. Thank you for listening.
This podcast has been brought to you by the Sonar Network. Sonar!